Johnson versus Walmart. Mr. Davis?
Yes. My apologies to the court and to my opposing counsel. First time I've ever done this, but my secretary is very upset.
All right. Well, we'll proceed. You may go forward.
This time?
You can go forward, Mr. Davis.
Okay. Thank you. Your Honors and counsel, this is a case of first impression, and it's our position that everything that this court needs to resolve the issue before the court, that is the apparent conflict between the suicide rule and the prima facie evidence rule, can be found in the Illinois common law without having to resort to other jurisdictions. Specifically, as I see it, the main stickling point by counsel's argument is the question of proximate cause. And Collada versus Anheuser-Busch provides us with the instruction on how proximate cause is to be used within the context of the prima facie evidence rule. And that is that proximate cause remains a jury question. It's the adoption and the application of the prima facie evidence rule in this case, because of the FOID statute, does not take the proximate cause question away from the jury. I'd also like to draw additional attention by the court to what is standardly used by attorneys in Illinois courts, and that's the Illinois pattern jury instruction. And it appears in my reply brief at 2, but it very clearly states that the element of proximate cause must still be proven. And that's in the notes with respect to the instruction about the violation of a public safety statute. On that same question of proximate cause, the key case involved is Collada versus Anheuser-Busch, which I cite a lot. But it also instructs that concurrent or intervening forces will not break the causal connection, and that proximate cause is left to the jury. So any of the arguments that defense places on the supplanting proximate cause by the prima facie evidence rule is misplaced, because we fully recognize, and the Illinois common law fully recognizes, that proximate cause remains within the province of the jury. The next sticking issue, I think, is the matter of foreseeability. And under the prima facie evidence rule, the precise injury does not need to be foreseen. And again, we rely principally on Collada. And Collada says just that an injury may be foreseen. And in Illinois, because it's one of five jurisdictions that have fairly restrictive gun laws, we have a statute that creates, if you will, notice that a sale of firearms or firearm ammunition to a protected class, of which the decedent Candace Johnson was a member by virtue of her having been in a mental institution within 5 years, puts the retailer on notice that that sale is a risky sale, and that it's our assertion that it's self-evident from the list of the protected classes in the FOID statute in Illinois that the legislative intent is to protect against injury to self and others. And that in itself, the statute, is what helps create the foreseeability. And I'd like to spend just a little bit of attention on those five other jurisdictions. There is no persuasive authority that comes from those other five. They're recited in my brief. And the only other authority that has to do with violation of a gun law are in a negligence per se jurisdiction. And this is, Illinois is not a negligence per se state, as reflected by the jury instruction that we just discussed. And on that, I think the remaining part of my arguments are supported, and I'll stand on my brief on.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Davis. I know you reserved some time for rebuttal, so.
Thank you.
Mr. Reeses?
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. My name is Mike Reeses, and I'm here today on behalf of defendant appellee Walmart. The issue here does not relate to prima facie negligence or negligence per se. Instead, this appeal turns on a different element necessary for recovery, legal cause. Legal cause concerns itself with foreseeability. Legal cause is satisfied and only satisfied if the injury was foreseeable as the type of harm that a reasonable person would expect as a likely result of his or her conduct. Like other states, Illinois does not allow recovery for suicide following a third party's negligence subject to certain exceptions that clearly are not applicable here. Rather, suicide is a new and independent intervening act that the third party cannot be expected to foresee. The district court properly applied that rule here. The decedent was an adult whose decision to take her own life was entirely her own, a self-destructive act that was voluntary and deliberate. It was her decision to load the weapon and intentionally shoot herself that proximately caused her death. The store did not cause her to make that tragic and senseless decision to end her life, and any violation of the statute was not the legal cause of her death. The district court was correct to dismiss the complaint when the complaint did not allege that she appeared suicidal or that she displayed any characteristics from which the sales clerk knew or had reason to know that she was likely to harm herself when she bought the ammunition. Plaintiff does not directly challenge the rule that suicide bars recovery. Rather, plaintiff says that this court should create an exception to the rule because the complaint alleged a violation of a public safety law. If a statutory violation alone established duty, breach, and causation, then plaintiff would never need to show anything other than a violation and an injury to recovery. That would transform what is ostensibly a negligence action into an action for strict liability. Plaintiff's argument would lead to the elimination of proximate cause. That result would be contrary to Illinois law. Now, plaintiff has cited Collada and the rule of Collada as to suggest that somehow the question of proximate cause is always left to the jury. That is not true. The accurate statement of the rule from Collada is found on page 7 of our brief. It states that the intervention of independent, concurrent, or intervening forces will not break the causal connection if the intervention of such forces was itself probable or foreseeable. The negative implication, of course, is that it does break the causal chain if the intervening act or superseding act was not reasonably foreseeable, and suicide is typically treated as not being reasonably foreseeable. There is no exception to this rule based on a public safety statute, and we cited a number of cases from our brief. Scoggins from the Iowa Supreme Court, Brashear from the Sixth Circuit, Drake from the Oklahoma Appellate Court, and Raines from the Tennessee Appellate Court. And these cases recognize that a purchaser's suicide is not actionable absent facts indicating that the suicide was reasonably foreseeable at the time of sale. Absent legal cause, the sale of the ammunition in violation of the statute by itself does not make the suicide reasonably foreseeable. The General Assembly of Illinois did not intend to eliminate proximate cause or impose strict liability for violation of the statute in these circumstances. The statute's declaration of public policy was to protect the general law-abiding public. The statute was not intended to protect certain classes of persons who were ineligible from acquiring a gun or ammunition and who presented a danger to themselves. In fact, the decedent was herself guilty of committing a Class A misdemeanor when she acquired the ammunition without the FOID card. Given the criminal penalties that attached to the purchase, the decedent cannot be said to be a member of the class for whose benefit the statute was specifically enacted when she herself committed a crime under the law. The statute does not create a private right of action, and plaintiff does not argue otherwise. Plaintiff has not cited a single case that has imposed tort liability on remotely similar facts. Even the cases that recognize liability focus on the circumstances surrounding the sale of ammunition or the gun, a focus that is consistent with the district court's analysis and is consistent with our focus and our argument here. The district court properly dismissed the action when, after giving plaintiff every opportunity to amend, and it was the plaintiff's strategic election to stand on the pleadings, plaintiff did not and could not allege facts showing that the suicide was reasonably foreseeable at the time of sale. Mindful that it's a privilege and not a right to argue before this court, we are grateful for the opportunity to do so, and for all the reasons set forth in our brief, we ask you to affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Davis?
Yes, and I'll try to be brief, and I reserve 4 minutes. I probably won't need it. One clarification. We are not seeking an exception to the doctrine of the suicide rule. The question properly before us is which doctrine, the prima facie evidence rule or the suicide rule, prevails. As one could alternatively argue that defense is seeking an exception to the prima facie evidence rule. And I think that would take the argument in a non-productive light. Furthermore, at no place are we denying that the doctrine of the suicide rule is active and alive in Illinois, and it is. What our argument is that when we directly apply the prima facie evidence rule and we look at the elements as outlined by the Illinois Supreme Court, and after all, this case under the Erie Doctrine is to be decided by Illinois law, we argue the prima facie evidence rule prevails over the suicide rule. The other question here is that when defense has said that we cited no other cases, it is precisely the posture of this case. My first remark today was this is a case of first impression. There are no cases. It has to be decided, and it has to be decided on the elements of the doctrines themselves. And I might point that the persuasive authority recited by my opponent was all from jurisdictions that do not adhere to the prima facie evidence rule, but rather were in the context of negligence per se, which is not an active doctrine in Illinois. And with that, I would like to conclude and thank this court for hearing the argument, not only on my client's behalf, but on the family of my client.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Thank you, Mr. Reyes. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.